There's a difference, though, between someone writing out a paragraph about exactly what you're incorrect about and then just calling you a
No. I mean, that's right. And usually the people who say don't take the time to write the paragraph. They're more of like just kind of guy. I'm a just a bit kind of guy. I don't do the paragraph thing. But
or the grammar thing.
It's usually,
or the non-caps lock thing.
Yeah, it's usually one or the other.
Why the fuck should you care about what this Puerto Rican from Texas has to say? Unless you have something
That's
new.
A good name for a show, by the way.
Remind me what I just said. Because I didn't write it down, so I have no idea.
Why the fuck should you care about what this Puerto Rican from Texas has to say? It's a little long.
It's a little bit long.
But
he dresses in flannel all the time.
Maybe cut out the part about Texas.
Yeah, I'll cut out the Texas part. Always cut everything down.
This Puerto Rican from Texas said this, and you'll never guess what happened next.
Hey everyone, this is the Libertarian Atheist Podcast. Just for a few updates, I'm working on a few different presentations right now, including the drug-fueled, surrealist, existentially invigorating Vermin Supreme rally, and a more serious dissection of Stefan Molyneux's recent campaign against migration, which will be split up into multiple parts. In both those cases, I'm dealing with countless hours of audio, video, and text to create an artistic and intellectually intriguing message that spreads information in a way that people will actually care about. It's a mixture of experience and ear for music, vocal changes, intellectual inquiry, and a fervent use of critical thinking and criticism. Criticism not only of other views, but of your own views, for you must continuously keep yourself in check so as to not steer your thought ship into propagandistic prose that perpetuate the personal projections that you attempt to put upon the public. The issue is that it's difficult to not fall into the traps of mainstream or alternative journalism. A world where feels alone and not critical thinking gets you the click, where five greatest or worst things about X that you already agree with are of the utmost importance, and where the narcissistic echo chamber rings so loudly that you can't conceptualize ideas that are counter to your preconceptions. To get away from that, you need discipline. You need to organize your thoughts. You need to educate yourself, and you need to do everything that's hard again and again until it's not so hard anymore. But to take a ride down the difficult paths that are less traveled, certain tools can be used that allow for a bit more ease so your brain won't push you back to the time of ignorance and Twinkie-filled modernity. They're not all physical tools, but rather lessons from others who've had to fight the temptation to quit. An earlier show done with Richard Grove, which you can find on YouTube or the podcast RSS feed, we went through the importance of logic to guide you through the dogma to find truth. Grammar, logic, and rhetoric are of the utmost importance when delving into any new topic. But after you get the message, the hard part becomes showing others what you've learned. The normal approach is to posting memes on the internet that propagate messages through passive-aggressive snide comments, followed by long Facebook threads where someone's uncle doesn't like liberty, and then that's followed by 145 statements of shallow argumentation that amounts to, "My liberty is good, you statist faggot!" The two co-hosts for the show today, Megan, also known as MK Lords, and Brett Minot of School Sucks Podcast, have both taken a little different approach to spreading ideas. As in, they insert new information in an easily digestible way through various means of communication, whereby they don't assume that they can change someone's mind, but rather open a door to a new way to experience consciousness. Though you can't tell from looking at the stuff both them and I produce now, everyone from Jeffrey Tucker to Bastiat had pitfalls during their initial want and drive to educate others on the wonders of self-liberation. So to help ourselves and help others, we're going to go over a few of our own pitfalls, talk about tools and ideas to make our message and ourselves more productive and organized, and bring up some important information regarding the types of practices that can hinder the ability of anyone to express their message. So, Brett, when you started doing your show, the School Sucks Podcast, obviously you were excited to expose issues that you saw in the world, but what are some of the mistakes that you saw that you were making along the way?
In the actual communication process?
In the communication process, more so than, say...
Technical. Well, I think the biggest mistake, and it's one that I'm still dealing with 6 years later, is who am I talking to and why?
Yeah.
You know, so I had an interesting history with the development and the growth of the show where at first I talked very much like a teacher, and some people like that because I imagined it being a show for teenagers. You know, like what a neat discovery. Here's an adult. Here's somebody who was on the other side of the classroom talking about school the same way you think about school. Isn't that nice validation? And it didn't take long before I was interviewed by Stefan Molyneux on Free Domain Radio. And I had a very small audience. No one was listening. And then maybe like 1,000 people were listening. So 9/10 of the audience were people who came from Free Domain Radio. So then I had to start speaking, you know, that language. And I mean, at the time, I was really, and still do consider Steph in many ways, especially the work he was doing back then, a really, really important teacher. I thought his communication style was worth emulating where I could. And I wanted to keep his people in my audience.
Happy.
Yeah.
You want to keep them happy. And I totally understand that. Yeah.
In my audience. And yeah, I remember also being like afraid to say certain things, you know, like I really wanted to be extra careful about how I phrase things, how I explain things, the position that I took on things, even, which I don't like to admit that, but it really, really factored into the presentation. And when I thought I was just talking to, hey, you're a student, you're 16, you're not as maybe, or I wasn't as disciplined as I was when I thought, you know, the very discerning Stefan Molyneux audience was listening.
You don't have to be as worried about people calling you on your shit whenever you're assuming that it's going to be a 16-year-old that's going to be listening.
Yeah.
Or whenever you are almost feeling like you're just talking to your friends, but whenever you're talking to a large crowd of people that you don't know,
mm-hmm.
you don't know who's going to call you on your shit and for what.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah, that can be incredibly stressful.
So by episode 20, we got in huge trouble for promoting civil disobedience, because I had a guest named Kat Canning on who had been involved with all the Keen activity.
Was she the one showing her boobs at the Keen thing?
No.
Okay,
Kat is an older woman, very nice woman. And that was the first real dust-up that we had, and it made me realize that I had to be more careful about what I was saying. And then we got a lot of people from Free Talk Live, so I lost my avatar, basically, of the teenager who's frustrated with school, and I didn't really know who I was talking to anymore. And at times it made the show seem kind of directionless, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so being an effective communicator, I think, especially through the medium that we've chosen, whether it's audio or video, podcasting or YouTube, is really being able to picture who you're talking to and having some understanding of why they're listening to you.
Megan, do you ever have an issue whenever you're doing, I mean, you do Freedom Fiends and a few other shows, kind of trying to conceptualize the actual audience that you are talking to, or maybe overthinking before you speak in some kind of fear that you're going to be misinterpreted in some way?
When I first started doing these shows, that was one of my biggest fears, because I came into things from the writing world. Most of the work that I've done has been from the writing side of things, and I got into writing as a form of personal therapy, just to kind of get my thoughts out there, and I didn't think anyone was listening. And this is, I actually make that mistake probably more often than I do overthinking, is I forget there's even an audience out there, especially when I'm doing the Freedom Fiends, which can be really irreverent and really, you know, off the rails with some of the stuff we talk about. And it's something that the host Michael has reminded me of a lot of times, like, hey, you have to remember there's an audience out there. So what Brett was saying really rang true to me, because I often forget about the audience, or I don't think of who may be listening, and it catches me off guard sometimes if I run into people who do listen to the show. And you know, I've done other shows with Bitcoin too, that they'll quote back to me what I've said, and I'm like, did I say that? Like, I would totally forget, because I forget that there's an audience out there, because sometimes I do kind of get in my own head a lot, you know, with some things, and it's kind of hard for me to remember that, oh yeah, maybe there are people out there who are listening and who care what I have to say. So I do kind of have to check myself on that. And then sometimes I do find myself overanalyzing it and maybe being a little bit more cautious than I would be. But I think I would probably rather err on the side of caution than not when it comes to my audio work, because it's something I'm less comfortable with. With writing, I'm a lot more comfortable with that medium of expression. I've just been doing it a lot longer. So when I first started doing shows, when I first started doing podcasts and videocasts and things like that, I was extremely nervous. I was almost paralyzed with fear. One of the first shows I was doing regularly was the Bitcoin group, and it was a Google Hangout show, and we would get live questions from the audience and things like that after the end of a panel discussion of a bunch of questions. And I remember just being petrified. The first few episodes, I can't even go back and watch them because I could barely even talk. And that's something that I've kind of struggled with. With writing, it's very easy to leave out the ums and the ahs and the you knows. And with speaking, it's very hard for me to get over that. So that's kind of been a bit of a hindrance to me as I've kind of transferred into doing more videos and audio stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the preparation has always been the absolute most important thing whenever it comes to dealing with the stress of knowing that other individuals are going to be listening to you. For instance, for this show and every other show I've ever done, I script at least the introduction somewhere in the middle and somewhere else, because I'm a much better writer than I am necessarily a speaker. And it's also a way to be able to channel kind of the ideas, because one of the best ways for me to be able to conceptualize anything is to simply put it on pen and paper or on a computer itself, because in order to be able to best transmit an idea is to create a narrative around it. When I am reading about a new idea or learning about something new, whenever I explain it to someone else is when I actually really am able to learn and register it, because create the story about what is going on in order to be able to transmit that information to the person. I came, though, from the Freedom Aid Radio world as well. I mean, that's why I'm an anarchist and everything else. And what I saw of him was, this is how you do a show. Hello, everyone. Like, you stare straight into the computer, into the webcam, and you tell them exactly what is the truth, and you tell them every single thing you know, and you know the truth about everything. And it's that kind of wise man approach. And some people are going to know more than I'm going to know, especially some asshole 28-year-old like myself. So it's important to just try to figure out how to systematize and understand the communication whenever you're injecting in other people, and not to get too worried about the fact that other people are listening. For me, it's always been a weird thing, because even for this fucking show, I don't know who's listening, but honestly, we're like number one of philosophy on Podomatic, and we're getting like thousands of downloads, and I barely know any of these people. And it's just one of these really, really strange things that I think about. There's thousands of people listening, and I don't know any of their names.
Well, you can kind of picture who they are, though.
To a point, but my audience is actually quite weird. Like, I mean, it started off with like a bunch of people from Child Protective Services. And then I started doing atheist stuff, and then it was more libertarianism stuff, and then it kind of switched around, and then some people stayed, and I don't know who the hell they are. So if you're out there, by the way, join the Libertarian Atheist Facebook group, and maybe say hi. That'd be nice. But it's just kind of trying to understand that audience and that communication. But you, Brett, you actually switched up your show at one point. What was like number 150 podcast or something, where you're trying to switch it from kind of a negative Nelly show where you just talked about how fucking terrible the world was, and then you wanted to start creating a podcast in which people were able to educate themselves to live a better life, correct?
Well, sure. And related to that is, I think one of the best ways to be persuasive is to, I don't want to just say make it appear, but like really have a good time and really show people that you're having a good time talking about whatever you're talking about.
Yeah.
That you enjoy this subject, that you're engaged by this subject, that you're excited about this subject. So I think I'm most funny and most engaging with other people when I'm shitting on things. But it was kind of exhausting, and it wasn't constructive. And I almost think it was kind of like a costly approach as far as building the audience. I think you have a better chance with in this world being shitty.
Yeah.
It's just in media creation, I think that's the truth. And I know some people are very, very successful doing like self-help or self-improvement podcasts, but they're not talking to libertarians, right? So they could have 100,000 engaged and excited listeners, but most of those people probably don't identify as libertarians. And what I've found, and I do need to make some generalizations here, but I found that there seems to be this bonding experience of getting together with other like-minded people in this circle and shitting on something outside of it.
Well, you know? It's but the thing is that's because it's tribalistic, right? Mm-hmm. Because within libertarianism, we have all these different types of mindsets, from atheist libertarians to Christian libertarians, and then there's minarchists, anarchists, and all this other stuff. And for a lot of these people, actually, they're quite agnostic on different positions, right? Whether or not they should vote, whether or not they should do these particular things. But agnosticism, or not understanding or not knowing on a position, does not create the tribe that you need, because you guys cannot bond on the fact that none of you know a specific topic. But you can bond on the demise of humanity, because you all can agree upon it.
What everybody else doesn't know.
What everybody else doesn't know. Yeah.
You can bond on that. I do have one more quick, I hear from MK first, but I do have one more quick comment on what you said before we move on to the next subject.
Okay.
But now?
Yeah.
Right now? Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen you do a lot of your preparations, and I know you write a lot of things out, and I don't know what it is, why I don't like to do that. I think it's more than just laziness. I don't think I'm really making excuses here. I think there is another layer to it. When I was a teacher, I was very meticulous about almost scripting lesson plans to tell these like historical tales, and they would get derailed by disruptive behavior, or we would run out of time, or I'd put too much work in and then feel like people weren't interested. And I even found I experienced that a little bit with the podcast, where I would try to have things very carefully planned, but I'd have a co-host or I'd have a guest and it wouldn't go the way I wanted it to, and I would get really frustrated, and I think it would show up in the recording. Like, I really, if I put the effort in, I really want things to go that way. And I like now taking a more relaxed and conversational approach to kind of seeing what happens. And it might not always be gold, but sometimes I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think there's something interesting about the exhibition of the human thought process. Right, like over scripting things like I used to do, or watching a YouTube video where somebody is reading the whole time, or even just like, I mean, that presentation has a place, but it's just not something where I think I shine. You know, I just don't think I'd be good at doing that.
I think you're quicker though on conversations. Go ahead, MK.
Well, I've been struggling with that too, because I tend to rely on writing things out beforehand, whether I'm giving a talk or even trying to do a podcast. Or I used to do an interview show where I'd have a bunch of, you know, pre-scripted questions. And the more I talked with people who were good at public speaking and even doing Freedom Fiends, it's allowed me to kind of tap into that spontaneity. And I want to tap into that a little bit more. I'm still kind of at this weird in-between spot where it makes me a little nervous to like go full on like unscripted. But I also wonder if that script is a little bit of a crutch for me. And I've kind of found, at least with the last couple talks I've given, it has been, as far as at conferences. So I'm trying to find a way to kind of balance that, because I like to have things laid out in a nice format to where it kind of flows nicely. But when you're doing an interview show or a podcast, then you kind of have to be prepared for the unexpected and kind of roll with it. And that's what doing radio has kind of taught me, is just some of the best episodes, at least my favorite episodes I've done, we didn't have any plans going into the show. Sometimes we'll come up with topics. We'll be like, we're going to talk about this tonight. We'll have like a list of topics that we'll go through. But a lot of times, some of the funnest ones have just been ones where we were completely, there was no script, there was no plan whatsoever. It was just complete anarchy, you know.
I get it. I get both of you. Yes, let's be free willing, liberty, and we'll just talk. And no. I understand. Just let me make my case real quick. I want to explain to you where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I started off doing a podcast coming out of working for the state, and I suddenly got to interview all these awesome people, right? I interviewed Molyneux, Kinsella, Jeffrey Tucker, and I had a co-host with me, Taryn. Great, great person. Neither of us knew what the fuck we were doing, though. And it showed when we were interviewing people. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We were just like, oh, I had liberty, liberty, liberty. And I had spoke atheist talk for, you know, 6 years running atheist agenda at my university. And then I left that, and I show up in, you know, Asheville, North Carolina. A lot of stuff has happened. And I have a lot of ideas, and I don't really have guests or anyone else I want to share those with. I don't know exactly what to do. So in my mind, I go, well, I should go the Molyneux route. But I know I am not so crazy that I can just stare into a camera by myself and just talk. So my way of being able to do something, which I bring up this idea a lot, which is actually the worst thing you can do is waste someone else's time. I hate wasting other people's time. And in the world where 5 to 7 minute YouTube clips are what reigns supreme, where tiny articles, where it's only 2 pages, are what hits quickly, you have to be able to quickly and efficiently produce a message into the person's brain that you're trying to communicate with. And what I found at that time was I actually set up teleprompters and I made my own entire teleprompter, which I've never talked about on the show before. Hey, why not? I'm not using it anymore, guys. It's not a crutch. And I would do the entire show that way to be able to efficiently deliver a message. And I got really good responses from people going like, holy shit, that was like an essay. Because it was. And it was therapeutic because before then, I'd never really been able to talk about these ideas in such an efficient way. And now, for me, the reason why I still do kind of scripted things and everything else is, one, it's way more fun. And two, there's a kind of risk to doing the whole, I'm not going to script anything, we'll just kind of go with it. And in the show that I run, the Libertarian Atheist Podcast, I'm very, very topic driven. This show, we're going to dismantle faith. This show, we're going to do this thing. This show, we're going to do this thing. So I want to hit a specific topic. And what's funny enough is that we're lazy in two different ways. I script the show beforehand, so I have to do very, very little editing. So it's straight up exactly what we meant to say, and everything's perfectly efficient. There's very, very few ums. You, on the other hand, I have watched you do a 40-minute interview and edit for 12 hours to produce it, an amazing content. But in my mind, I'm just like, you could have spent an hour before that.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I will turn on the microphone, and I could spin around in the chair peeing on myself and just reassuring that I can fix it in editing.
No, it's true.
And it is. It is true.
I mean, I've seen you do this is probably I'll edit it out later on if you don't want people to know. I've seen you do 8 takes of 2 sentences.
Yeah.
Like, making sure that you're doing it exact, and you're telling me that I'm doing the prepping. It's like, you're obviously...
No, that's true. That's a good point. And this is actually part of the reluctance that I have about straight talking into a video camera, because you can see the edits, and I'm not going to do jump cuts, and public speaking, because there's no way editing can fix those things properly.
That's why it's so much more exciting.
And I agree, and I hope I can get over that, and I hope I can become more competent in those areas. I do spend most of my time in post-production, like you spend most of your time, Carlos, in pre-production.
Yeah.
Maybe that's true for you too, MK. Now, to that, I will also add the thing that of all the things that I've done, the one that was perhaps the most well-received ever, as far as view count was concerned, was me reading something I didn't even write into a microphone,
which was
the John Taylor Gatto videos.
Yeah,
right. So, but now that was
to be fair, you fucking produced the hell out of them, though. I mean, you did a lot of work.
It's all post production.
Yeah, it is all post production. That's true.
So the only prep for that was to flip through the Underground History of American Education and say this would make a good video, and sometimes that would take 5 minutes. Sometimes that would take 3 days to find the next one and figure out how to make it into a video, but. And then the other thing is MK's video that has way too few views.
The Truth About Makeup?
Which is red, and it's brilliant. And it couldn't have worked any other way.
You can see MK blushing over here. You're going back to Brett here. No, you're talking about The Truth About Makeup?
Yes, one of my all-time favorite videos.
I showed Brett that.
What?
And he fucking laughed at it.
It's so good. It is...
I had very little planning for that. I watched the stuff on Molyneux Video, The Truth About Makeup, and I had watched a previous one before. It was a shorter version, and I was just so amused and so, God, it was just incredible how wrong he was. And I just had to, think, what is the logical conclusion of what he's saying? Oh, burlap sacks. And I literally wrote that out in one take, and then I read it in one take, and then I just threw the video together afterwards. And it just kind of came in a burst. Like, I normally, plan stuff ahead. I didn't even plan to make a parody video of that, actually. It just kind of happened. I just was like, oh, I happen to have some free time. I'm just going to, throw this out there. But I do like having something already written to read ahead of time. It helps me feel a little more comfortable, because I'm still not at – I don't feel that I'm at a proficient level of speaking kind of off the cuff yet without you know, adding in a bunch of extra words and ums and stuff like that. So I like having something that's pre-scripted.
But I want to
get better at that. So
I'd actually like to point out something too. So on an episode you were doing with Thaddeus Russell, he was saying, "Oh, you should have very little things scripted. You should have a few points here or whatever."
Which is usually what I have. Yeah.
But to be fair, Thaddeus Russell, who I like, is much better in a written form. And if you do a show with them, as I've done shows with them, there's a lot of editing that has to go afterwards because there's a lot of ums and ahs and cutting out things.
Yeah. He and I actually talked about that recently because he was saying he might want to start his own podcast. And I said, well, you got to talk more. And I pitched our idea of him letting him come on my show once a month where you would co-host and we would basically just let him vent about whatever was bothering him that month, which I like, and it's good practice.
Daddy's bitches.
Those shows that I did with him, I did 12 episodes, and it was a ton of post-production, maybe the most post-production I ever did on anything. But in the end, we had a product that I was really happy with, and I don't want to make it sound like there's no pre-production because I do. We're going to get to this probably in a little bit. The tool Evernote has been awesome for unscripted conversations because I keep everything in there that I come across that it has, you know, some kind of intellectual utility. And during a conversation, if some subject change comes up all of a sudden, I can just type it into the Evernote search, pull my notes on it, because I take a lot of notes when I'm not recording. You know,
yeah.
And I save a lot of articles related to notes that I have, so I can jump into a subject quickly if I need to. And I've gotten better at taking notes, so I don't have to kind of like scroll through them looking for the important things. I highlight things. I try to only write down what I need. So that's a pretty good tool.
So obviously, whenever you started doing your show, you saw a lot of issues that were a part of the public education system, and you started trying to produce a show that transmitted your thoughts to a larger audience. Whenever Steph went ahead and interviewed you, obviously that grew. Now, we were kind of talking about organizing your thoughts and trying to make an efficient show. What were some ways that you went about organizing your thoughts in a better way so that you weren't in a position where you were just basically telling everyone what they needed to think all the time? Because I'm sure at the time, you had things that you were unsure about. You had things that you didn't necessarily know the answer to. So how did you organize that in a way to where your audience didn't think you're just some buffoon, but that someone that should be listened to, but is also on a quest to learn things as well?
I don't think that came through then. I think that the presentation was more like, you know, it's the problem that I think we experience a lot. The less you know, the more you think you know, you know?
Yeah.
And 5-6 years ago, I didn't know as much. So I thought I was pretty fucking smart, you know? And, I wasn't thinking hard enough about a lot of things I should have been, thinking more clearly and more carefully about and more slowly about. But, you know, I had Wes's work behind me and I really trust him as a thinker. And, you know, I was really trusting of Steph at the time and Rothbard. And I just felt like I was well armed. And if I'm talking to an audience that basically came from Free Domain Radio and I'm saying the right things, it was like a nuke through this effort to communicate to that audience and all of the challenges that I talked about, it was almost like this new kind of laziness developed. I hate to admit it, but it's like, oh, say the things that they want to hear.
Yeah.
The reason why I did a series...
Yeah.
In 2010, this is a lot to admit on the show.
Okay, go for it, man.
That I was not ready to do.
Which was?
It was called "The Kids Are Not Defective."
Yeah.
And I did it because they said, I think, on the Free Domain Radio boards, or maybe Steph said it himself, when is Brett going to talk about parenting?
Really?
And I said, now. So my webmaster at the time was a big Free Domain Radio guy. And he said, you're probably going to have to crack this subject. You know, you probably should. Because you seem like you're kind of dancing around it on the show, you know.
I really like the Kids Are Not Defective series.
But I wasn't ready to do it. And what was interesting, what happened was like all this stuff that I really wasn't ready to reveal about me just kind of poured out. Because I don't know what the fuck else to say.
Yeah.
You know, like these were my experiences. And there was one show where I put it out and I was just like, Jesus, that went too far. I said too much. I said way too much.
Really?
Yeah. And people were like, that's the best show you've ever done.
Yeah.
It was called Holes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I really was feeling overwhelmed at the time, I think, by the reception that the show was getting. And I was scared and I really wanted people to like me. And I really, really thought, and I still do think there's a lot of really, really bright people who were listening to the show at that time. And that had come from the Free Domain Radio community. And I wanted to belong without belonging.
You are talking about how you wanted to be like liked in this crowd and you wanted these people. And Megan, our other co-host here, has kind of taken a different approach nearly every time you've been kind of a part of a community where you're kind of of the belief, and I am too, whoever is transmitting an idea within a group,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter who they are, everybody needs to be called out on their shit whenever they're incorrect. Because that is exactly how we got where we are right now. It's our initial skepticism. And once we end up being with this, finally meeting other weird, crazy people, a lot of times we stop being skeptical because we're already agreeing on one fundamental thing and we're so afraid of losing this group around us. Which is why I think a lot of people have not questioned even everyone from Jeffrey Tucker to Walter Block to Steph to all these other people.
But I also will say that in 2010, the topics that Steph was dealing with, there was yeah. like a far smaller margin for error.
You're absolutely right.
You know, it yeah. was like his libertarianism was much thinner then.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't mean that he still there weren't mistakes there. I wasn't listening to every episode. I was kind of picking and choosing the things that I thought were interesting. I would be surprised if I had heard more than like 400 episodes of the show total.
Yeah.
Maybe 500-600 maybe. But
I like how by the way we're going. Oh, I've only listened to 1,000 hours of another human being talk into my earbuds.
But if you look at what he's accomplished even intellectually, and he's like 10 11 years my senior, it's impressive and it's worthy of respect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you look at what he's accomplished with Free Domain Radio as a media outlet or instrument, it's impressive and it's worthy of respect. And as he's broadened horizons for topics, there's more places where it's going to be, oh, geez, I don't think so, sir. I usually like you, sir, but that's what
this, sir, I declare this is
but
wrong.
Because I had that feeling about him, and in many ways still do, and still have to give him a tremendous amount of credit, the people who were in that community, not everybody who's in that community, because I said this somewhere else recently, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are not using critical thinking skills and are just following and are just yesing along with what he says. But I met some people through that experience and through that connection that were very impressive. And I started to picture that as an avatar. And so I don't want to just say like I was scared and I was faking. There was a reverence that I think I was trying to honor through what I was doing. But I also did want acceptance from that community because of that.
Now, Megan, how do you feel about, I mean, did you have moments, at least since you've, you know, we like to, I mean, I know you don't like saying I'm part of the movement or anything else, but we're all kind of part of something, right? We're all part of something of people spreading a specific type of message that has to do with mental and physical liberation and getting past the dogma and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
None of us would be doing fucking radio shows and podcasts and writing if we weren't trying to strive for something. Have you had, I mean, you've had a lot of run-ins, though, whenever it comes to trying to communicate these ideas, especially ones that are contrary to whatever the norms are that are being created within this internet libertarian movement as a whole, correct?
So something that maybe a little where I differ from Brett is whenever I've approached, whether it's writing or talking about stuff I've never expected to be listened to or really taken seriously. Like, I never expected that anyone would care what I had to say. And I've always expected that I was wrong about something. So I've tried to leave channels of communication open to be corrected. So I started writing as a form of therapy, and then I started doing kind of educational stuff with Bitcoin and things like that, just out of, as a way to say, hey, I'm kind of figuring this out as I go. Come along with me for the journey. And I think this comes from being a bit of a tribe hopper, or like a tribe floater. There's not really a term for it, I think, of what I'm trying to describe.
It sounds like it's something sexual. Been... That's all I know.
Well,
I'm the tribe hopper.
Tribe hopper. So I've always been on the periphery of various tribes throughout my life, and I've never really been a part of one specific one, because I really like observing people, and I like taking in a lot of different viewpoints at one time. And that's kind of how my worldview has been shaped. And that's also why I think at any given time I'm wrong about something. So when I started blogging, I tried to I've always been a bit of a contrarian, so I'm going to criticize what I see as hypocritical or inconsistent. But I'm also open to saying, you know, hey, I could be wrong about this. Who knows? And so what I did with my interview show, Crypto Convos, that I was doing for a while, it was a Bitcoin interview show, and I interviewed a ton of people like Jeffrey Tucker and Patrick Byrne and Andreas Antonopoulos. Hangouts, as much as I hate Google Hangouts, they used to have this cool function on there called Q&A, and they took it away, which I don't understand why. I don't understand why you take away the single most useful function of Google Hangouts, but they did. But it was a Q&A part. So I would have my pre-scripted show and all the questions I wanted to ask my guest, and then I would leave it open to the audience to have them in live time, give me feedback and give me, you know, whether it was correcting me on what I said or just asking really good questions that I hadn't thought of. And I would kind of try to go scripted and off scripted at the same time, depending on which questions were more relevant for the flow of the conversation. And I've tried to do it with writing too. Anything I write, I leave all comments open on. I don't believe in banning people for commenting on something, even if they disagree with me, even if they call me a cunt or a bitch or whatever, which has obviously happened a few times when you're critical of a community filled with certain types of people.
Especially if you're a woman, because you get called a dumb cunt bitch. Which is basically, that's how they roll.
But that's the internet, and like it can't be, you know, whatever. Who gives a shit? I like criticism. I like feedback. I thrive on being proven wrong, basically. I know that's kind of weird sounding, but I like finding out that I'm wrong about something.
I'm
wrong. This gives me an opportunity to correct my thinking on something. And I've done this with several things that I've written. I've had to go back and be like, I was wrong. I apologize. I was like, you know, not right with that. But the things that I do try to stick with, stick with what I believe, and if I see something that I disagree with, it's just a part of me to call it out and say something about it. And I say I've been a bit of a tribe hopper, and I know some people would say, oh, well, you're a libertarian, you're kind of in the movement, and I still don't even really feel like it sometimes. I mean, I am, and I'm not, I guess.
You're propagating, you're going to go move to a place to propagate the message of Bitcoin while doing the Libertarian Atheist podcast and the Freedom Fiends at the same time. Yeah, you're not part of a movement at all. No, you're just like this tribe hopper. You're not doing anything at all.
Oh, and I'm not trying to say that to be like, oh, I'm not part of it. Yeah, I obviously am part of a tribe now. And like, it's kind of a good feeling because it's not something that I've experienced throughout my entire life. My entire life, I have kind of jumped around. But I do like being a part of something, and I do like being corrected if I'm wrong and learning from it. And there are several wrong beliefs that I'm holding right now. I don't know what they are yet, but I like to be open and willing to find out. And I think kind of taking that approach has allowed me to grow as a person, which I think is more important than being right.
Yeah, actually, Brett, I do have a question. So for me, there were some things I figured out I was wrong while I was doing the podcast. Like this thing I did was Origins of War and Child Abuse, in which I made this large case that we can see throughout history that violence is always on the decline and that all tribes are incredibly violent and everything else. And I actually wrote like my thesis paper in college in regards to it. And then I started to discover holy shit, I was wrong about a lot of these different topics, mm-hmm. which I'm trying to present later on as like just an issue of statistics. It was a lack of understanding on my part. And when I discovered that, I was like, I wanted to let people know because there is a raw actual excitement that I kind of get whenever I do discover that I'm wrong about some kind of concept, because then I immediately get intrigued about why I was wrong about it to try to figure it out. Were there certain topics while you were doing your School Sucks show that you figured out you were incorrect about, like key, maybe not key principles, or but just kind of ideas?
That's a good question. As far as like little,
well, obviously like liberty, you're not wrong about. Okay, so, liberty.
So then there's the that's the biggest umbrella, right? And then mm-hmm. under that is the government schools versus education. Now, I feel like I've been pretty solid on those things.
Yeah,
I feel like I said too many positive things about this phrase unschooling without knowing enough about it, and without knowing enough about what people are doing out there and calling unschooling, and how much of it would I agree with and how much of it would horrify me.
Yeah.
You know? And all right, so that's something that's obviously really, really important to the show. As far as little misstatements about this fact or that fact, I probably haven't done anything like that in at least 15 minutes, you know? But I was listening back to the last show right after I rendered it and posted it, and I just made a mistake about, you know, like my timeline was out of order about something, and I'll correct it in the next show. I identify with what Megan was saying, and I actually wanted to ask her about this being wrong, or this, maybe not a desire, but this interest in being notified when you are wrong. For me, it's almost like, wow, when it started to happen for the first time, even though I talked about like this apprehension I had about it, it was like somebody is listening closely and yeah. they care enough
yeah.
to take their time to try and set me straight on something. So I don't know, Megan, when you talked about you assume that no one cares, is part of like somebody like taking the energy or the effort or the attention to say, hey, you're wrong. And then they call you names. Maybe they don't. Hopefully they don't.
There's a difference, though, between someone writing out a paragraph about exactly what you're incorrect about and then just calling you a bitch.
No. I mean, yeah. that's right. Yeah. And usually the people who say bitch don't take the time to write the paragraph. They're more of like just bitch kind of guy. I'm a just a bitch cunt kind of guy. I don't do the paragraph thing. But
or the grammar thing.
It's usually,
or the non-caps lock thing.
Yeah, it's usually one or the other. But can you identify with that at all, Megan, what I was saying about, oh, great, there's enough investment in what I have to say that people would take the time to.
Yeah. It's really it kind of surprised me the first time it happened, and it made me feel good that someone cared enough to listen and correct me too, so that I can sharpen my arguments. I have had a lot of good feedback from people in a corrective way, being like, "Hey, this little detail was wrong. You may want to correct this." And what it's done is it's allowed me to strengthen my arguments over time, and it's a good thing. I've had struggles with self-esteem my entire life, and that's where that kind of whole no one's listening, I'm just going to throw this out there kind of comes from. You know, why would anyone listen to what I have to say? I've been wrong all these other times. I'm wrong about things now. Why does anyone care?
Yeah.
But people do care. If you put your stuff out there, people are going to listen, and they're going to care enough to want to help strengthen your arguments sometimes. And I think that's really great. That's really edifying for me.
Absolutely. And I just, there are these extra salt sprinkles in the wounds of, you know, less than perfect self-esteem. Like, I remember I went home every day from 2004 to 2006 saying, I can't keep the interest of 12 kids for 45 minutes in history, you know, and feeling like I was a failure as a teacher, as a communicator. Not every day. I mean, there were some successes, but those failures would really sting. And I think that I don't remember the moment where I was like, yes, today's the day I'm throwing one of these conversations I had with myself on the internet and we'll see what happens. I remember it was August 5th, 2009, but I don't remember what made me do it that day. And just kind of letting it go, you know, and not really thinking that anyone was listening or anyone cared. And then when people did, I was like, holy shit. And I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier about being accepted into the free domain community as like a serious podcaster. was like this overwhelm of, I didn't know this was going to happen.
See, I had a way.
I just like to hear myself talk.
So whenever I interviewed Stefan Molyneux, it was like me and Taryn's like third podcast. And this guy on one of the YouTube comments goes, "It's great that you're allowing fans to interview you on the show for the show."
What?
Like the guy was basically saying he didn't really consider us like a show. He just thought it was like two friends interviewing Steph. Like, yay, it's Steph and Molyneux time. Like I was like, oh man, were we that fucking bad? I was like, oh, so I definitely did not get the serious response type thing from that particular community. Honestly, though, no one should have. I didn't know what the fuck I was talking about. And when you started doing your show, you were way more organized. You also had 10 years on me and kind of knew. You had also done Western Show and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
No one should have ever taken me seriously until I started talking about Child Protective Services. And no one really did. And that's fine because you have to find a niche about why you are important. That is the organization thing that I'm obsessed with, you know, the production, the creating of the mental image with the other person is, why the fuck should you care about what this Puerto Rican from Texas has to say? Unless you have something
That's
new.
A good name for a show, by the way.
Remind me what I just said, because I didn't write it down, so I have no idea.
Why the fuck should you care about what this Puerto Rican from Texas has to say? It's a little long.
It's a little bit long.
But
who dresses in flannel all the time.
Maybe cut out the part about Texas.
Yeah, I'll cut out the Texas part.
Always
this cut Puerto everything
Rican
down.
From Texas said this, and you'll never guess what happened next.
Well played. You're trying to deliver something important, and you did too, though, right? It's like you were a former public school teacher, and there was no one else who was an anarchist who knew their shit who also had this particular message.
Yeah, I mean, that's close. Like, I felt like it was an underdeveloped subject. I had heard... No, I had heard Wes talk about it, so I wrote to him, and I was like, hey, can I audition to be on your show? That's how I thought it was. This was like the big leagues. You got a podcast? How'd you do that? And he said, you could just come on the show, you know, if you know what you're talking about. And we talked about education, and then... you know, I know like maybe Steph had mentioned it. I mean, we're talking to that. I know Steph keeps coming up, but a lot of my stories are like 5 years ago, and they're the libertarian, like serious intellectual heavy hitters doing podcasts.
It was Wes and Steph.
It was Wes and Steph.
That was pretty much it.
Yeah. So, they had each said some things about school. Rothbard has a chapter about education in For a New Liberty. I didn't know who Jeffrey Tucker was. I didn't know who Walter Block was. I still don't know how much they've said about it and how succinct what they've said is.
Yeah.
I'm searching. And then there's people who are like kind of outsiders but kind of allies, like Iserby or Gatto. But no one had ever hit this issue consistently from that philosophical vantage point.
Yeah,
so.
I like being in the position I'm in with the Child Protective Services whistleblower thing, because what's fascinating to me is still there's yet to be another one who's come out. But if whenever someone does hear about the stuff I do, because I'm so fucking crazy, it comes attached with all this other stuff. And it's actually a great talking point from I am this person who used to be a Child Protective Services investigator, but I'm also an atheist anarchist. And there's a whole philosophical reason why I'm against the agency. It's more than just something's bad. It's there is a set reason why it will always inevitably lead to bad results, because the state itself is a monolithic leviathan that destroys lives. And I thought that was an important message to be able to come from that context. So kind of a last point that I wanted to hit on here, though, was we were talking about some of the problems that we've made when we're starting up our shows, whether that was communication or trying to tell other people how to live their fucking lives when ours might have not been going that well. But I wanted to kind of talk about other podcasters or content creators that you've seen that have made some mistakes that you think are happening a lot, that a lot of people are making mistakes in. Not only just activism, but just content creators as a whole. Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything that's been remarkably bad?
Most of my issues are more like technical or marketing related. Like going in to do some kind of libertarian podcast without a niche.
Yeah.
You know, because you're never going to, you at this point you've just been outcompeted, you know, like again, last mention, If people want, you know, like really succinct, more kind of scholarly content, there's hundreds and hundreds of hours of Complete Liberty. There's two books. And I'm not just saying, hey, I know you got dreams, kid, but fuck off. Scram, you know?
Well, you got to find a niche, though, like, because you're not first to market.
You're not first to market. So I'm not trying to be discouraging, but a lot of really fantastic work has already been done, and that includes Steph. That includes Complete Liberty and Wes's stuff. So trying to do a live show that's just like topical libertarian, sorry, you know, you're number two at best because of Free Talk Live, you know. So really kind of surveying everything that's going on within the effort to spread the philosophy of liberty and saying or asking yourself, where are the deficits? What's not being talked about, you know, regularly? I mean, people might talk about these things, you know, here and there, but is there some unexplored issue that I could hit on? Like, don't just do a libertarian talk show.
Yeah, and deeply reflect on the question, why the fuck should anyone else care what I'm thinking?
I think that's
an important thing.
Exactly. And also, like, really, I think you mentioned it, Carlos. What do I know the most about? And that kind of answers, that might work towards answering the niche question as well. But it doesn't automatically have to. But, like, people want to listen to people who know more than them about whatever is being discussed. So figure out what that is. If you don't have that thing, you know, come back later. Now, I'm actually in an interesting position where I've said everything I want to say about the thing that I think where I'm better educated and better experienced than most people. You know, and so now it's like the show's had to go through like a few reinventions since then. And fortunately, like, I've built an audience around like having this authority in the beginning and building rapport with people and being likable or entertaining, I guess. I think I am.
Yeah, I think you're an entertaining guy. Yes. Yeah. Mutual masturbation hour again.
Yeah. Yep. So there's no debate about that.
Yeah,
there's no, and MK silence will take that as agreement.
Well, I do want to kind of add on to that. If you, kind of common mistakes, balancing good content and good technical quality. A lot of times you can be pretty well connected and land really good interviews, for example, with prominent people in libertarianism or whatever field that you're working in, but your sound quality may be really bad. Michael W. Dean has been pretty instrumental in helping me with this issue and really pointing it out to the point where it's really hard for me to listen to any podcast now unless it has really good sound quality. You can't just go on Google Hangouts and throw together something and expect it to be watched or listened to, because the first time someone hears you and you're having a bad connection or something like that, or you keep dropping out or there's sound quality issues, they're going to turn it off and they're probably not going to come back. Yeah. So and you also want to have really good, consistent content too. I agree with what Brett said, finding a niche of some kind that, you know, people aren't exploring and people aren't talking about. And listening, especially, I guess I have more experience with interview shows. So listening to what the person you're interviewing is saying and not just having a pre-scripted list of questions. I've seen journalists do this and this really bothers me. I've also seen people on interview shows do it. They have a pre-listed script of questions, which are all probably very good questions, but they're not listening to the flow of the conversation. There's not a back and forth kind of dialogue going on. It's just like unrelated question after unrelated question. And that's really disconnecting, and it makes the person you're interviewing pretty uncomfortable too. Mm. So yeah, really finding that good content, having, you know, get a good quality mic. I mean, and they don't have to be very expensive little Audio Technica mics. I think Michael actually has a whole series on podcasting too that's really useful for anyone who's starting out. And yeah, finding something that's different to say, and also listening to other people who've done this and who have experience doing this, you know, what they have to say and where they've kind of gone with things, so you're maybe not repeating the same thing or kind of falling victim to the echo chamber.
You know, and you know, we were talking about niches earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And an important aspect is, of course, you don't only have to ever talk about your niche, right? Like Child Protective Services, that's how I kind of got into talking to individuals. And that's still what I care about more than anything else. But then after that, then an audience cares enough about you to actually hear what you have to say, which is then I start talking about things like MDMA and a bunch of other things.
Yes.
And that can be really beneficial. But on to the point of just technical stuff real quick. Blog Talk Radio is not fucking radio. It's two people talking on an old phone. Like, it is the worst sound quality. I will never do a Blog Talk Radio show again. If you're calling it a podcast and you call in on a phone, that's not the internet.
Yeah, let's call Blog Talk Radio and Talk Shoe the black hole where libertarian conversations disappear into non-existence. Because no matter, and I understand, like, people want to do live shows and they haven't figured out how to do it yet. And
like
I
logging in on the Skype.
I can't criticize people for it, because as soon as I figured out how to make my voice show up on the internet, I was podcasting.
Yep.
And the standards were different then, in my defense, but I shouldn't have been getting away with what I was getting away with, because it was fucking bad.
Well, the funny was the fact that you were using like a what is it?
Radio
Shack microphone. It made it sound spooky, and you played music with it and everything. So there was like a certain thing to it.
Like I was under the table in the teacher's lounge.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a kind of a spookiness to it, so I was okay with it. And it was all very cryptic. Like, knowing you now, the person then does not seem like the person I know now.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mainly because your voice doesn't have a massive echo in it and doesn't sound so tinny.
Oh, I wish it did, though. That'd be very cool.
Very spooky.
Yeah, so I would take the time to learn, just to jump on what MK said, Michael Dean made a video. It's on YouTube. It's called, go to the Freedom Fiends channel or Michael Dean's channel. Just search Michael Dean on YouTube, Michael Dean Podcasting on YouTube, and he'll show you how to do it on a
everything.
Budget.
Yeah. And he'll fucking explain the weirdest stuff that you haven't even thought of. He's like, make sure you're doing your podcast on a non-trash day, because then the trash comes in and it's too loud. And he's like explaining like the weirdest stuff. It's just keep in mind that the chances of someone actually listening to what you have to say are quite low. So try to make it look to see what you can actually do to make yourself seem important.
Yeah, and this is not a pep talk, but at this moment, they're lower than they've ever been. The chances that somebody in the podcasting world, the chances that somebody are going to listen to what you have to say if you're just starting right now, unless you're already a famous comedian,
fucking
lower
famous
than
comedians,
lower than they've ever been.
Yeah, no. What is it? Podomatic. Podomatic has like 30,000 podcasts on it.
Podomatic probably close to 100,000.
There's 100,000 podcasts on Podomatic. Jesus Christ! And we're number 44, folks. Megan, you were going to say something.
I think it's important to have extremely low expectations whenever you start a podcast, because then you can't be disappointed that no one's listening, but it also gives you good practice. So I'm kind of embarrassed at some of the views that some of my older videos have gotten, whether they were interviews or even on the Bitcoin group, because I really wasn't ready for prime time, so to speak. Mm. And people were listening. I don't know why. I don't know why anyone would have listened to that, but they did. And what it did, though, is it did inspire me to get better. And practice does make perfect. You know, you just got to keep at it. Don't get discouraged. If it's something that you really want to do and something that you feel that has to be said and put out there for people to consume, then keep at it and, you know, keep going with it. No one is going to, you know, no one writes Moby Dick on their first try writing a book. You're not going to write perfect essays. You're not going to do perfect radio shows or perfect podcasts your first time. So just keep at it and you will get better, especially with things like writing and speaking. They can be really daunting at first. And man, looking back at some of my old material, it's like, oh God, I'm super embarrassed by it. But I have seen good progress over time, and anyone could do that if they just keep at it. And then they listen to the feedback too, most importantly. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of people who maybe consistently put out things, but they think that they're already good enough or that they don't need any kind of help or feedback, so they don't listen to that, and that ends up hurting them in the long run.
Yeah, my initial writing was shit. It was so fucking verbose. Like, because the way I started writing was, I mean, outside of school, obviously, was I wrote hundreds and hundreds of pages of legal documents for Child Protective Services. And then I would write this crazy, like, overly verbose anarchist writing to get out all my feels. And then somewhere in between, I figured out how to write. But I want to do a show later on. Me and Megan have been wanting to do this for a while, and we'll do it soon enough, which is how to not write like a libertarian. Because I think it's important to kind of break down. You don't have to say individual instead of person every single time. And you're allowed to say I. That's fine. And you don't have to say stated. You can say said. Anyway, I have a fucking list that I'm working on of like things that you don't need to write to make yourself feel important. But anyway, I know this is kind of a loosey-goosey show, folks, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. You can find Brett, of course, at SchoolSucksProject.com, correct?
Yeah, that should work.
Very cool. And you can find everything at libertarian-atheist.com. Hey, and this is one last thing. September 24th, there's going to be a John Taylor Gatto tribute. Not tribute. It's going to be a fundraiser because, sadly, John Taylor Gatto, the writer of Underground History of Education, had a stroke about a year ago. And he has a lot of medical bills and things like that. So we're trying to help him out as much as we can. I'll actually be playing music. And this is at the Abel Ebenezer Brewing Company in New Hampshire. And Brett Vinat will actually be doing a little speech in regards to John Taylor Gatto. So that should be good.
Yeah, John's been sick for actually like four or five years at this point. And I know his wife is ill too right now. So it's a shame because he's been so consistent and powerful a voice in the raising awareness about the history and intentions of government school and the dangers of government school and kind of opening doors for people into what maybe education should look like for more people, if that's what they seek. And the fact that he's not, comfortable in his old age is frustrating because he's done a shit ton.
I mean, so much of what you and Steph and a lot of other people have said regarding public education, a lot of that we know, I mean, and think of it in that way in regards to progressivism and everything else is because of John. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's really amazing resource, and it's shitty that he's in the spot right now that he's in. So we're going to try to get some money for him to help him out with his family. So that'll be September 24th. You can come see me play some music and see Brett speak, and there'll be other members of the Free State Project there as well. And also the brewing company is actually really good as well. So
one more update.
Yeah.
Carlos will be playing guitar, and I have actually decided to sing.
Oh yeah,
my speech over the music, which should be really nice.
Oh yeah, totally. I'm going to be playing eclectic flamenco fusion dance pop.
That's exactly what I love to sing to.
Yeah, absolutely. With a little bit of dubstep in the background.
Perfect.
And a meth dot whore dancing in the corner while she's peeing. So it'll be a really, really good time.
You'll have to bring her because I'm going to be focused on the speech.
Okay.
I'm going to be in San Diego, though.
Oh, no. Sing! Alrighty, folks. Libertarian-atheist.com. Do it. Bye. All right. There's going to be a lot of fucking editing on this thing.
I don't think so. I thought that was actually pretty tight.
That was tight to you?
Yeah, that was
fun.
Oh, no. I had a great time.